left to right. Fake the handoff. Now Wojcik with pressure coming. Throws. It's intercepted by Malice. Here he goes. He's gone. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Another pick six for this Cavalier defense on back-to-back weeks. And the Hoos out in front.
Yeah, big pick six by Max Vallis proved to be the game winner. That made it 24-3 Virginia. That was the halftime score. The Hoos didn't score in the second half, but defensively they did enough to hang on 24-19 and move the record to 4-2. This is Hobbo along with Frank and Chris Sill. And we have our friend Chris Wright, the editor of the Sabre, on the line. Chris, we appreciate your joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad the Hoos are winning.
Yeah, that does make it more fun. You know, it's always more fun to win. So talk to us, your assessment of the first half of the regular season, Chris.
I think pretty much right where we expected they would be if this was going to be a turnaround year. So if they're going to get to a point where they're bowl eligible, I think you look at the schedule, heavy home schedule at the beginning, you think they have to go 4-2. So I think they're right where they need to be. The best news about it, though, to me, is that they could be 6-0. A few plays here and there in either of those two losses. I mean, this team could have won every game they've been in. So that's a dramatic turnaround from last season when you felt like they were out of so many games.
Chris, this is Frank. Thank you again for joining us tonight. And we always have appreciated the affiliation and support of the Sabre and working with you and Chris Horn and everybody else there, it's always been terrific. So I just want to get that in. All right. You know, a better crowd on Saturday night, 44,000 thereabouts. They're trending up again. What are your thoughts on the fan base, the team itself, the new helmets, the whiteout, just all that?
Love the helmets. I thought they looked really good under the lights. It'll be interesting to see if they wear them again. In a non-nighttime game, what do they look like during the day? But I really like how they looked at nighttime. White at home is fine. It doesn't really matter either way to me. The fan base is interesting right now. They're kind of getting back on board, but there's still that little bit of a I don't want to get my finger stuck in the mousetrap type of approach to it. You know what I mean? Like, fans just aren't sure how far on board they want to get with this team yet. But you can clearly see the product is better. The coaching management decisions are better. The defensive lapses have occurred, but not nearly with the frequency of last year. The offense is showing signs. It's just a much, much better product on the field than it was a year ago.
Chris, Frank had mentioned this before we went on air. Special teams, a couple of breakdowns on Saturday, the block punt, as well as, what, one or two kickoffs went out of bounds, giving Pitt good field position to start drives. So that's, I guess, something they need to address.
And I actually spoke to Coach London after the game about that very thing. Does a bye week on the schedule give you more time to work on special teams? Because, you know, the week-to-week schedule in terms of preparing for an opponent doesn't allow for as much time to focus on certain fundamentals or really drilling a specific thing like lane assignments on special teams. The bye week allows you to do that. So I fully expect that stuff to get a lot of work this week. And then, you know, you go back into game prep mode next week with Duke. But clearly the special teams was better at the beginning of the year than it was in 2013. But now it's trending off a little bit. You know, kickoff return at BYU, a near disaster on Saturday with Boyd getting upended by Vezinalek there at the end, or that could have been a return for touchdown. So, you know, they're flirting with some really big breakdowns consistently now. So special teams is an area that lane assignment discipline and things like that will get a lot of attention this week.
Chris, curious about a couple of things. Number one, the overall quality of the defensive line and the surprisingly stronger play than expected by the offensive line for the Cavaliers. Talk about that dynamic, if you will.
Yeah, the defensive line is starting to build a little bit of depth. You know, Quanti Moore starting to contribute. They played two tackles this weekend because of the heavy rushing attack from Pitt. So Dante Wilkins played really, really well. You're starting to get a nice little depth built up across the front. And if you're only going to play three a lot of times, and that's still going to happen going forward with certain opponents, it's good to have, you know, two or three extra guys you can rotate in. The offensive line has got to be the revelation of the season in my mind. Like, very, very good in pass protection, very good depth, able to bring in different guys. And then the running game is getting steadily better. So not only are they better at like a starting point than we thought they would be, they're also progressing and improving. So very encouraged by that group.
What about the looking ahead to Duke? What are some of the things that Virginia would have to do well to get out of Durham and get a victory?
You got to start with Crowder, both in the return game and in the receiving game for Duke. He's very talented, very experienced. They really tried to pick on Tim Harris with Crowder in last year's game, and I think they ended up with one big play in the second half that Crowder either scored on or set up a touchdown on, getting a catch inside the five. But he's a guy that can turn the game on one touch, very similar to a Tyler Boyd from Pitt who they just played. So the good news is they just got a test that's very similar. But I think you have to start there. You have to figure out where Crowder is and how you're going to deal with him.
Another thing, overall, the health of the team right now, it appears that Trey Nicholson will be redshirted. Any other news of any consequence other than Mateo having foot surgery?
Not really. You know, the two that are the big names that you're the most worried about other than Mateo would be Mike Moore, who played pretty much his regular amount of snaps this past weekend. He's coming off an ankle injury. And then Grayson Lambert, who's missed two straight games after getting kind of rolled up on at BYU. But by the time Duke gets here, he'll be off for a full month, four straight weeks of, you know, rehab treatment, limited practice, things like that. So his ankle should be okay coming out of that too. Beyond that, some injuries, but nothing like, you know, too overwhelming or too unexpected other than Mateo.
All right, and let's follow that up. Considering we've already played, the Hoos have already played six games this year, you've got the bye week to sort of recharge everybody's batteries. What are you expecting from Virginia heading down to Durham in a game that now feels way bigger than it ever has in a long time? I mean, all of a sudden, Virginia's in a position, if they can beat Duke, they're in a position to win the Coastal.
Yeah, if they can get a win on the road, which is something they haven't done yet. So, to me, that's the first thing. Can you prove you can win on the road? Because to win the division, you're going to have to win at least one, probably two games on the road, maybe even three, depending on what happens. I think probably two wins on the road will be enough with how even everybody looks in the Coastal side of things. So, if you're chalking up a loss at Florida State, you know, you only have a few other opportunities to get a win. First one's at Duke, but think about it this way. If they can win at Duke, there's a very good chance they could be bowl eligible before the end of October, which would be huge for this team. It would take a lot of pressure off of them going into what will be a tough November with Georgia Tech, Miami, Florida State, and Virginia Tech. You don't want to go into November needing two more wins. You know what I mean? You need to get at least one more in October, preferably get it out of the way altogether where you know you're bowl eligible and you can really focus on making a run at the division crown once November gets here.
You're right, because, I mean, you got Duke on the road, but then they come home to play North Carolina, and all of a sudden North Carolina is looking very ordinary. They're really struggling down there in Chapel Hill.
They look worse than ordinary. They really fell off a cliff. A little bit surprising. You know, they were, I think, picked second in the division by the preseason media, and right now they're looking like they're destined for the cellar the way they're playing.
Well, I don't know that they've – I can't remember if – I don't think UNC has played Miami yet. I don't think they've played Georgia Tech, and they haven't played Virginia, or they just got beat by Virginia Tech. There's a very good chance Carolina could finish last in the Coastal, which is
– Yeah, very, very good chance. They still have Duke left as well. So
I don't – in fact, I don't see how that coach is probably going to lose his job.
I don't know if it'll go that far, but it certainly will get everybody's attention because they were supposed to be on paper a lot better than that.
All right, let's talk about surprises. I think Georgia Tech is better than folks had expected. Clearly, Virginia is better than the outsiders and the North Carolina media thought. What else do you notice, particularly about the Coastal division of the ACC?
The biggest thing about the Coastal, and I thought this going into the season, is that everybody's pretty even. You know, So if you can win at home and steal a couple on the road, you're right in the middle of everything. I don't see anyone as a runaway favorite on that side. And frankly, Florida State looks a lot more pedestrian than expected on the other side. I know they're still winning, and they're still ranked very highly, but they haven't looked like national champions like they did toward the end of last year. So really the whole league is playing through like parity and trying to figure out who can climb to the top on either side, with Florida State being the obvious favorite on the other end. But I couldn't pick a Coastal winner right now if, you know, like I could win $1 million by getting it right. I just don't feel that confident in any team declaring themselves the real obvious winner on that side of
it. Well, we talk about imbalanced schedules, and everybody plays two teams from the other division. Virginia, of course, already has beaten Louisville, which is one of the better teams in the other division, have to play Florida State. I know Virginia Tech plays Wake Forest and Boston College in the other side, so the Hokies have a little bit of an advantage from that standpoint.
You know, Boston College is kind of their rotating partners. You can't hold that against them, but I don't know how Virginia gets Florida State, I think, four times already in Mike London's 5 years, or three times in Mike London's 5 years, when every other opponent on that side, it feels like, are 6-8 years apart when Virginia play them. So somebody in the conference office likes to match up Virginia and Florida State.
All right, and that's a good point. Chris, we've got about 30 seconds left before we go to break, and on the other side, we've got head coach Mike London joining us. If you were sitting with us asking questions of Coach London, is there anything you'd like to know?
The biggest thing to me is a couple of scary linebacker moments on Saturday where Romero came out for a second, where Coley came out for a second. What's the linebacker development behind those guys doing right now?
Interesting thought. I saw 53 went in the game, and he only went in for one play. I'm trying to check him out right now. Micah Kaiser, who has been pretty decent, I think, on special teams. I wonder if Coley isn't nursing an injury, because he was not flying into the hole very often during the game, and it was almost like he was hoping other people would make tackles and he would just go to an area on the field to hem somebody in. I will say this. He made a tremendous sack of the quarterback at one point in the game that – you know, had everybody on their feet cheering. But that was not the Henry Coley that's been leading the team through the other five games this year.
I think that was mostly a game plan thing to put him in a certain spot to clean up as much as anything. But I think you're right. Like, he is a guy that if he gets hurt or if he's nursing an injury, you got to wonder about those guys behind him, Kaiser and Bradshaw and some players like that.
All right, Chris, we thank you as always, and look forward to your next visit on the show.
Thanks much.
All right, Chris Wright from the Saber. We're going to the bottom of the hour break, and don't forget, when we return, Mike London will join us. Stay tuned.